Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's the WOSU Fall Membership Drive. More about that in just a bit. As the grip of the pandemic loosened and Americans were once again free to roam, our national parks were swamped by an unprecedented spike in visitors. The fascination with our treasured parks, from mountains to forests to coastlines and deserts, has not abated. And if you're planning a national parks trip next summer, now is the time to plan. Travel writer and author Mike Oswald has hiked, biked, and paddled thousands of miles over the course of more than 200 visits to national parks across the country. The first edition of his book, titled Your Guide to the National Parks, was published in 2012. 10 years later, the third edition of Your Guide to National Parks is available. Mike Oswald, welcome back to All Sides.
And it's an absolute pleasure to be here, and hopefully we can get some new members.
Yep. How much do the parks change between the three editions? Is it just minor details that only you would notice, or are there big changes?
It's mostly minor details. So it's reading a lot of the park websites and looking at, like, pet accessibility has been one of the biggest changes, which I think a lot of people are happy about.
More accessible?
There are a lot of parks that aren't very pet friendly, but a lot of the trails are now opening up to pets, and that's definitely a good thing for people who like bringing their best friends along, right?
Yeah, they're pandemic puppies.
Yep, right. So yeah, we don't want them going to a humane shelter. So bring them along with you to the parks. But and it's kind of like me researching more and going around to the parks and finding all sorts of things that I didn't know about, because these places are huge. Just the other day, a guy that I was helping plan a trip to Glacier, he was talking about Joshua Tree, and he brought up this Chasm of Doom. And I'm like, Chasm of Doom? How come I don't know about that? and that's where the first two trips around the country, the first one was really fun. The second was just kind of fun because I was redoing a lot of the same things to get better pictures and do all the popular stuff. And now this third trip that I did was more seeking out things that I didn't know about, a lot of people don't know about. And so I do add a lot of that sort of stuff. But the main focus of the book is all the, like, popular things people know. And so a lot of it doesn't change from edition to edition.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're asking you to support this nonprofit public service radio station. Visit WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And we have some wonderful thank you gifts for this hour to help you plan your travel for the next year. For $10 a month, you can get a great book called Your Guide to the National Parks. This is a new edition of an award-winning guidebook, and it includes more than 450 new photographs, 160 revised maps, and 50 hiking tables. It is the only guidebook you'll need to explore the United States National Parks. Get this great book at $10 a month as a sustainer when you give at WOSU.org or when you call 866-897-9678. Also, for $10 a month, we're offering the National Parks 2023 Wall Calendar. This beautiful calendar features 12 prints from illustrator Kai Carpenter. The calendar includes plenty of space for writing notes and reminders, and as a bonus, each image is in a ready-to-frame vintage poster format. That's $10 a month as a sustainer to get the National Parks Wall Calendar and support public radio at the same time. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Remember that listener support is the foundation of our budget. You listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher for information and analysis. You listen to this show to dig deep into important topics. So give now at WOSU.org or call us at 866-897-9678 and show your support and tell us that this matters to you. 866-897-9678. What is your assessment at this point about the parks and how well equipped they've been to handle that influx of visitors I mentioned at the beginning?
It's definitely a challenge, and the challenge probably lies heaviest on the staff. So, you know, they're at the quote unquote front lines of managing people, but they are taking many steps to handle this sort of thing with timed entry permits, and I haven't seen anyone, like, talking about larger campgrounds or more lodging facilities, because those things are, like, they're really only packed for a couple of months each year, And so it does seem sort of impractical to change that for this influx, because I would imagine things would probably go back to a more steady state post-pandemic, if we consider ourselves post-pandemic right now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there definitely are some changes that they've done with the time entry and just staff knowing how to handle people.
Have they had a problem staffing up?
Yeah, just like every employer these days, staffing has been an issue for the national parks. And it's a big part of the experience, too. Like, you go there and you want to spend time with the ranger, go
right.
on a ranger program, go on a ranger tour, and some of those things just aren't possible with the level of staffing. And those things, you're kind of spoiled in this area, like some of the more urban parks that we have, like Cuyahoga Valley and Indiana Dunes. The ranger experiences are a really big part of that. So they have the trains at Cuyahoga Valley, and they have they're doing Quidditch at Indiana Dunes one time when I was there. And they do all sorts of these little unique things. And like Mount Baldy at Indiana Dunes is only accessible with a ranger, and Pinhook Bog is only accessible with a ranger. So that situation where they can't find rangers, and being honest, like, finding rangers for the parks is often a difficult task. Like, they like to have people that are partners, because it reduces the turnover rate. They're definitely a higher retention to have that. So I think it was probably increasingly difficult with everybody being stressed and not knowing what's going on with the virus. So, yeah, definitely a challenge.
It's great, though, that so many people discovered the parks, and even if it settles down, it's created a new set of memories for people across the country who've been able to see them then maybe they wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just talking with your producer Marcus about how I felt when I was growing up, and I don't know if he felt the same way. Like, a lot of people didn't talk about the parks like they do now. Sort of the track was go to Europe, like go to college, go to Europe, and then come back here. And then when I was like doing some other things, people would be like, well, why don't you go look around the United States? And like, that never crossed my mind. Like, you knew about the Grand Canyon, you knew about Yellowstone and maybe Yosemite, and that's about it. And there's so many, like, in addition to the 63 national parks, there's 175 national forests and 420 some National Park Service units. And yeah, at least for me in particular, it never crossed my mind. So I mentioned the third edition, going and finding new things. Like, that's been really fun, where if you look at the maps in the book, there are all these spots that are just a black dot and then a name on the original national park maps, and they're almost always really fun. And like, I never noticed that before, so now that's kind of the thing that I'm doing, is I'm looking at these places, there's no elevation name, and I kind of think it's like a code between the people that are making the maps and the park rangers, like, we know about this, other people don't, and maybe that'll make people mad to say something like that, but yeah, just more things to check out, because these parks, as I said, are huge. Many of them are more than a million acres, and they are fairly well developed, that you can get to many corners of them relatively easily.
It's interesting how some people go back over and over and over again.
Yeah, so last time we spoke about Isle Royale, and that has the highest return rate of
yeah,
all national
Isle
parks.
Yeah, Isle Royale in the middle of Lake Superior.
Yeah, so it's up in the UP, middle of Lake Superior, and maybe that makes sense, because it's the only national park within, like, I don't know how many hours driving. Voyagers is probably
true.
The next closest, but it does show that people love it too, like going and hanging out with an island full of moose and hanging out in your little three-sided shelter and spending the night. And
that's where I saw the Aurora Borealis for the first time, was on Isle Royale.
Yeah, awesome. That'd be really cool to sit back and enjoy that, and just nothing but the sounds of nature, right? And
are there any other national parks that are islands like that?
Yeah, off the coast of California, not far from Los Angeles, and however many million people, is Channel Islands.
Oh, okay.
And I think five islands, and all of them are hiking centric, although you can snorkel and scuba, and it's well known for paddling through caves. And other islands, Virgin Islands has a national park, so that's one, like, so you're talking about, like, not knowing about a lot of these places, like, a lot of people will open up that book and they'll be like, I didn't know there's a national park here or a national park there. Like, mm-hmm. American Samoa has a national park. And, but yeah, U.S. Virgin Islands has a national park that's kind of, it's definitely not an Isle Royale feel. It's the tropical feel with beautiful beaches and quality snorkeling and the island vibes. But, yeah, there are a few, like, there are islands within in national parks, right? Crater Lake has a large island within it, Wizard Island, which is really neat. It's a cinder cone in the middle of this almost 2,000 feet deep.
A cinder cone?
Yeah, it's just a weird little volcanic looking, like a mini volcano inside of a big volcano. It's weird place, and that's what makes all these places really fascinating. And that one, that park is incredibly accessible. Like, you drive around the whole rim of the caldera, and you look into this great, like, it looks like a paint swatch, just this deep blue lake when it's about midday. And it's really very striking.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Mike Oswald. He's a travel writer and the author of Your Guide to the National Parks. It was published in its third edition in 2022. This is 89.7 NPR News. It is our membership drive, and we're asking you to make a gift and support this public radio station today. Thanks to, Denise Loftus in Powell, and also Liz Alcaldi in Columbus. Thanks for your support of 89.7 NPR News. Make a gift of $20 a month as a sustainer, and we have a wonderful gift package for you. It is the National Parks Combo, and you'll receive Your Guide to the National Parks, the latest edition, plus the National Parks 2023 Wall Calendar. This is a perfect thank you gift package for anyone who has plans to go on a road trip to visit our nation's wonderful parks. Give now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Make your contribution of $20 a month as a sustainer right now and get this Ultimate Parks Combo Package. This is a great day to become a member of 89.7 NPR News. Or maybe increase your sustaining membership and you'll be supporting the news and information you rely on and trust. And you can get a great thank you gift package to help you plan your summer vacation. We're also offering the book Your Guide to the National Parks at $10 a month as a sustainer, or the wall calendar for $10 a month. Make a gift that fits into your budget and get a great National Parks thank you gift in return. And you'll be supporting public radio at the same time. Give now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. You listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher for in-depth analysis of the most important issues of the day. We've been digging deep into the opioid crisis in Ohio. We have examined social justice issues and racial disparities, but there is also room on this show to take a break from the news. Shows like this one about travel and the joys of the great outdoors. These shows are important too. If having a talk show that is truly local is important to you, please make a gift today at WOSU.org. Thanks to Mary Corridan from Columbus, and thank you to Mike, Dick, and Powell. Thank you so much for your support of 89.7 NPR News. Remember, we're listener-supported 89.7 NPR News. The number to call, 866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org and join Mike and Mary and Liz and Denise and show your support for 89.7 NPR News. Again, my guest is Mike Oswald, travel writer and the author of Your Guide to the National Parks. This is a big, fat book, and it's filled with detail. How did you come to put it together? What's your philosophy about how the book is put together?
It's kind of, so by degree, I'm an engineer, and I think it's a very pragmatic approach, just what makes sense, what to focus on, and what would be intuitively for the traveler, what they need to know. And I think in general, the goal of people should be to be fairly heavily educated on a subject. In the national parks, even though they've been heavily visited, I don't think the depth of knowledge on them isn't that great. If we go back to Yellowstone, people know Old Faithful, people know Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone. They may not know the Beckler, it's Cascade Corner. There's a bunch of waterfalls, in addition to the beautiful Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone. And every single park is kind of the same like that, where there's a bunch of knowns and then a whole lot of unknowns or relatively unknowns. So I'm trying to put that at people's fingertips, and maybe not right out there in front of them, but to give them the information of what is entirely possible in the national parks. So from all the activities beyond hiking, like paddling, snorkeling, scuba diving, kayaking, biking, there's all these different things. There's carriage rides you can do up in Acadia in Maine. And there's horseback tours in a whole bunch of the parks. And that's kind of not what the typical national park goer thinks about, I don't think. It's more of a drive-in, look at a few things, maybe take a quick hike, and then drive on to the next destination, which is a perfectly fine way to go about things. But I think they're missing a great deal of not only experiences, but just like family moments together when they're doing this, whoever they're traveling with, that they can enhance the experience that they have at each of these places, because they're truly special. Like, they are like a gift to our people.
How, I mean, I mentioned earlier, this is a good time to get your book, because this is when people should be planning for next summer, right?
Yeah, that's kind of one of the unfortunate side effects of the popularity of the parks, is that things like lodging and camping do book extremely early. There are a lot of places like Denali, I know. For next summer, you'll need to book in December to get camping reservations. And a lot of them, too, they're just like calendar-based, and you can find all that information in the book or all the park websites. But there is like a huge advantage to stay in the park, to camp in the park, to stay at the lodgings in the park, just because it's so much more convenient. I think you're talking about, like, just from at the Grand Canyon again, if you're going from the south rim to the north rim, that's an hour or 2 hour drive around the canyon, because the canyon in the park is 277 miles and there isn't a bridge straight across it. Like, you're looking from, well, it's only about 11 miles from rim to rim. You have to drive a great distance around through Page, Arizona, and back up to the North Rim. And several of the parks are like that. Like, Death Valley is more than 1 million acres, and you're talking hour, 2 hour drives from one point to the other, where it's way more convenient to stay in one place, either camping or lodging. And as the national parks, like, the biggest differentiator between all the other National Park Service units is that they are more developed, there are more creature comforts. The camping is largely front country camping, where you have bathrooms and water and less things to worry about, and lodging is available in most of the parks, so you can have a bed too and warm meals if you want them.
How well do you think the National Park Service has done in balancing the needs of the many with the needs of the fewer, I guess, people who are disabled, people who have accessibility issues, that kind of a thing?
They're pretty good. Like, it's definitely something that's always trending in improving, like a positive direction and making them more accessible. But this is nature we're talking about, and nature isn't like, you look at the Grand Canyon and there's no way that people with accessibility issues are going to be able to make work. But so my family went out to Mount Rainier back in August, and I have a nephew who's in a wheelchair, and they just made a trail at Box Canyon that's wheelchair accessible, all paved, and that was a great experience for him. And then you go up to like Paradise, and there are paved trails, but they are steep. So a lot of those things will depend on how able-bodied like your help is too. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, and there are other things, like a lot of people talk about Alaska as being like one of the least accessible places, because you just think of it as the last frontier and totally wild. But if you can find a outfitter that will take you on the plane, like, that could be one of the most accessible parks to you by just flying over, and you'd see more than the average tourist would see when they go up there. And if they land at one strip or one lake and they'd see very little of the park, where if you just fly over and take a look, like, that could definitely be a life-changing experience for somebody. And there are, like, a lot of the parks have free shuttles, and those are always accessible for wheelchair users or people with mobility issues. And but more, maybe you need to pick the right park for you, too, depending on what your situation is. Like, Crater Lake, again, that would be a great park for anybody with mobility issues, where you can drive up there. And I would definitely recommend going around in a clockwise fashion, so the right turns are into the outlooks. Uh-huh. and viewpoints. But that's what you're doing. You're going to overlooks, and it's different from every side. And there are a couple different things, like that Wizard Island, and then there's a phantom ship on the other side of the big lake. But that one's extremely accessible, and you'd have a great experience going there. And
a phantom ship?
Yeah, that's what they call it. It's just another rock formation. Okay. That's sticking out of the water. And then there's a log that actually floats around, and every once in a while they'll take the boat tours to go see that. That's called the Old Man. And they have it aged, like how old, I don't remember that number, but there are other parks like that too. Like Bryce Canyon would be one that I'd consider extremely accessible, where it's all about looking into this beautiful amphitheater with weird rock, goofy rock formations. And the national parks are the same. Like, they're pretty well developed, and developed with motorists in mind. So as long as whoever's trying to do this with any sort of accessibility concerns can get around in a car, and probably the long drives I think would be the hardest thing for them, rather than navigating the parks, because you are going out there in the middle of nowhere for a lot of these places where it requires several hours drive from wherever the previous point you're leaving from, for the most part.
Right. Some people just make it a mission, like, to just see as many national parks as possible. And I know that's kind of your livelihood, but do you meet a lot of those people along the way?
Yeah, there's a lot of bucket listers and a lot of people trying to cross off all 63, and some of them get disappointed when a new park is added. Others get excited. They're like, ooh, a new place to go to. So it's kind of, I don't know what that is. The competitiveness.
Lifetime count thing.
Yeah, those park national park geeks. So yeah, that's one guy I was talking to recently who, he's definitely in that category, and he had 48 hours for Glacier National Park. He's like, well, what do I do? I'm like, oh, take more time. That's like that's the first thing. He's like, oh, that's all I have. New kids on the way. And I'm like, oh, all right. So, and it's tricky figuring those things out for people, because you don't know what the weather's going to be like. And that when he came back, he had all sorts of, he had a flight canceled. He spent one night in Las Vegas. So there went his 48 hours to 24, but he still made a lot out of it. He went on a pretty good hike, and he went up to Ptarmigan Tunnel, and he got to the tunnel on the other side of, so there's this, this Glacier National Park is on the border of Canada and the United States and Montana. And Ptarmigan Tunnel looks from one valley to the next, and the Belly River Valley is on the opposite side of it. And he said it's just all fog on the other side. So he's like, that was disappointing. But then he went down, and then he saw, like, mother and grizzly cubs playing with each other. So he's like, that made it worse. He's like, nothing bad happened, and that was totally worth it then. And then his next day, he did the hike that he's looking forward to the most. And he's like, best hike I've ever done. Oh, wow. And all worth it. So this works for a lot of people where you know, my initial reaction is take more time. And it's not feasible for a lot of people with all their other commitments. So it does work. And that is kind of a fun goal to cross them all off. So I think very many people would be disappointed if every of the 420 whatever National Park Service units were all national parks. So the naming does work out for that sort of thing, the bucket listers and collectors.
Thank you to Catherine McCracken in Columbus, and also Donna Agriesti from Hilliard. Thanks for your support of 89.7 NPR News during our fall membership drive. If you listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher every day, then now is the time to show your support. 89.7 NPR News, it's a part of your life. You rely on this station for important information. All Sides has been covering the economy. You've heard shows on the challenges of affordable housing and the future of work in a post-pandemic world. We're covering the opioid crisis, and we've been previewing the midterm elections. 89.7 NPR News brings you news and information that you can trust to be accurate. Give now and support the coverage you count on. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. This hour, we're talking about visiting our national parks with author Mike Oswald. He has a great book about the parks, and it is our thank you gift today. Make a gift of $10 a month and get the book, Your Guide to the National Parks. This book includes step-by-step itineraries, kid-friendly activities, and lists the most popular ranger programs at each of the national parks. Whether you plan to stay at a hotel or to go camping, you need a guidebook, and this book is essential. Make a gift of $10 a month right now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Also, for a gift of $10 a month as a sustainer, you can get the National Parks 2023 wall calendar. This beautiful calendar includes 12 unique prints that highlight the best of our national parks. It is a beautiful calendar, and the images might inspire some future travel for you too. That's $10 a month at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Or if you can increase your gift to $20 a month as a sustainer, then you can get both the guidebook and the calendar. This National Parks combo package is the ultimate thank you gift for someone who loves our country's parks and someone who loves public radio. If that's you, then make a gift right now. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And before I forget, this is an opportunity to get ahead on your holiday gift giving. This would make a beautiful gift for somebody planning an upcoming trip that you know about. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Again, my guest is Mike Oswald, author of Your Guide to the National Parks, which published its third edition this year. What are some of the less well-known national parks that you wish people would take a time to visit more often?
Yeah, there's definitely a few of them. Big Bend National Park would be one that stands out to me, and it's along the Mexico-United States boundary with Rio Grande flowing through it. So the Rio Grande enhances it a lot, where you can do some whitewater rafting and some paddling. And there's just great big gaping canyons that are there that you can hike above some of them, you can hike into some. So there's lots of fun things to do, and it's most people would think that it's a just winter only park, but there is a area of high mountains, Chisos Basin, in the middle of it that stays relatively cool for spring and fall, and it has great hiking opportunities there. And like most parks, it is very very accessible to motorists, and it has a bunch of four-wheel drive trails too. And then I was thinking about those hurricanes kind of coming towards Florida, and there are a couple of parks down there, and then those would also fall under the island parks. There's Biscayne National Park that a lot of people don't know about, and it's real close to Miami. And the reason I think it's relatively unknown is that you can't really access it by car. And that's the same thing with Dry Tortugas, which is down the Florida Keys. So you can take boat trips to all these little, the Boca Chica is a key, and there's Jones Lagoon at Biscayne National Park, where you can paddle around or stand-up paddleboard at Biscayne. And there are also a lot of snorkeling and scuba options there. There's a bunch of shipwrecks, kind of like at Isle Royale too, where there's shipwrecks and some interesting snorkel opportunities. But then going over to the other end of the Florida Keys is Dry Tortugas, where it's built around an old, I don't know what century, naval fort. So it's uncommon in that it has a large man-made structure on it, this huge brick building that was meant to be the scourge of the seas during the trade days of when all the trade was coming out of New Orleans down the Mississippi River. And now it's a national park. So it was prison for a little while, and then sort of quarantine station for a bit, and then it got handed over to the Park Service, and now it's a national park, and it's important for it's a great birding destination. It's a pretty heavy migratory bird traffic going through there, and every once in a while I think there's a couple hundred thousand sooty terns, so they close a couple of the keys for them to nest their nest on the ground. And so there too, like, you can, it's not accessible by car, but you can take a ferry to it or a seaplane, and you can actually camp on the island too. So that's a pretty neat experience, where you can have this island with a huge naval base, basically all to yourself, the handful of campers that are there with you. And that one I experienced where I'm not particularly scared of bears or moose or elk or all the big animals, but there is a little bit of a rat problem and hermit crab situation going on the island. So you do want to have some sort of either a cooler or a bear resistant food container to keep your food and scented items under control. They do have some poles to hang your things, but those aren't the most rat proof. so that's kind of a downside, and they never talk about that, but I think people would like to know before they get there.
And that's a point we should make about your book, is this is not U.S. Park Service approved. This is I don't think they're against it, but you don't go to them. They don't feed you this stuff. You get your own information.
Yeah. So I try to follow all the things they say, and like, those are always interesting kind of little debates in my head. Like, if we go back to Glacier, like, there's a bunch of off-trail peaks that people go to, and they currently instituted that they can fine anyone who geotags one of these peaks on social media posts, which is an interesting thing. Like, I don't think I agree with it, really, because a lot of people are going to them, not a lot, but a lot of people that they trust, and I kind of feel like anybody reasonable person should be able to go there, and tagging it, like, you can find.
What's their objection to that?
So they're saying more people are going and it's dangerous. So okay. A couple people fell off some of these. That same guy who went to Ptarmigan Tunnel and saw the fog. So. I reached out to him because there was one day where the shuttles were shut down. I'm like, man, I hope that's not the day he's going on the hike that he's looking forward to, because that would make it very complicated without the shuttles. And I'm making an assumption here that like three people died in the same day falling off of cliffs, and one was an older gentleman, and it was a shuttle driver. A shuttle driver died at the same time, and they just shut down the shuttles for a single day. And that was one of the days when he was going to be there. And I was just like, man, he can't catch a break. And then he heard all about it, but he didn't have any sort of insider information if the guy, one of the guys that fell off the cliff was the shuttle driver. But I'm just kind of putting two and two together that might be it. So there are a lot of people that love the park. They go to these peaks. And so I don't know if they don't want the regular people who are going here to go to them, or to think that it would become a real problem with a lot. So many of them are really hard to get to. And as long as you, like, it'd be better to have more information in my mind and to know how difficult it is and to know where to go, and then hope that people can make the right decisions. Like if they can't make it or shouldn't make it, or else it should kind of be all off limits. I don't know. I don't know. There's a lot of gray area for everything. I don't know where. I'm not an all or nothing type person, or maybe permits and gauge people what the situation is. But it is kind of a weird tactic. And maybe it's just a threat to just don't take your social media posts. But I don't think that's going to lead to increased traffic.
And I don't think social media is going to go anywhere either. I think it's kind of here.
Right. So it is weird. Like a lot of people like share the pictures, and then like, they can find out where they are if they want to. Like there are people that literally write books and have maps on these places. So if you really want to find it, you can find it. But then I guess maybe they assume those people are capable of navigating what they need to navigate to get to them. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of interesting things like that. And I understand like the difficulty of some of the rescue missions that they go on. Like in the summer, there was a dentist on Denali who was using somebody that he was helping climb up, used his like rescue responder, like he had one of those Garmin inReach things, and they didn't need help, but he was telling them to get help, and that turned into a big kerfuffle about like, and
wasting
he got fined,
the time
and, yeah, he got fined and banned from Denali. So yeah, because that puts a lot of people at risk to go up to that elevation in a helicopter, and so you're risking other people's lives for you, so you can have a easy ride down from the mountain.
Oh,
which is that's a big issue. So where Glacier, like the highest peak, I don't know what it is. It's like 9,000 feet. And as long as you're in summer and there aren't huge risks, like you're paying attention to weather. And so, but yeah, those rescue guys, their job's not easy, especially when they get in situations like this. But I do kind of feel like there's kind of that cynical part of me where like they like rescuing their friends. They don't like rescuing the people they don't know that are going there. Like I think a lot of people see kind of tourists as the enemy, where tourists are like, I don't know. I think it's good for the country, for people to know how beautiful our country is and the things that we have. So
thank you to Carlos Scaccia in Dublin for your support of 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Mike Oswald. He's a travel writer and author of Your Guide to the National Parks. It's in its third edition now this year. This is 89.7 NPR News. It is our membership drive. And I just remember that gifts from listeners like you are the foundation of our budget. Again, Carl Scaccia in Dublin, thanks for showing your support. You're part of the foundation of how we make ends meet around here. We do not answer to commercial influences in public radio. We are not beholden to shareholders. We only answer to you, our listeners. So make a gift now and support this mission at WOSU.org. Or you can call 866-897-9678. When you make a gift of $10 a month as a sustainer, you can get a great book that we're talking about at this hour, Your Guide to the National Parks. Whether you're driving through or hiking off the beaten path, this is the only book you'll need to make the most of your next national parks adventure. The book includes step-by-step itineraries, kid-friendly activities, and thousands of hotel and restaurant recommendations. The book also includes hiking tables, easy-to-find trailhead markers, and popular ranger programs. From Arcadia to the Badlands, from the Rocky Mountains to Shenandoah, this book has it all. That's $10 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $120 at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And don't forget that for $20 a month as a sustainer, you can get the guidebook plus the National Parks 2023 wall calendar. It's a great package for a fan of public radio and a fan of travel. One of the reasons people listen to public radio is because it takes you places. It takes you on adventures. You hear reporting from around the United States and around the world. You are more well-informed and better citizen when you listen and learn from public radio. And as Mike Oswald said, he thinks it's important for people to discover all the beauty that this nation has and has set aside for people in the United States. This station helps you better understand the world around you and takes you to places you've never been. Take a moment right now to show your appreciation for public radio by becoming a member. Give at WOSU.org, and thanks for your support. Mike Oswald, what's the deal with reservations? How does it work when you do something like that?
It's pretty simple these days, where recreation.gov is like the main hub for reservations for almost all campsites and activities that you can book within the parks. There are a few like anomalous points where there are private concessioners operating their own campgrounds or possibly their own lodges. But everything's pretty upfront and straightforward, like booking a hotel through your favorite travel app. So you just go to the website, pick your dates. But you do need to know timelines. So that's either you have to have a guidebook or go to the park website and know when the window is to make your reservations, especially for like holiday weekends and busy summer travel season, or if it's a park that has a different season, like Utah is very busy around spring break, spring and fall, and there are a few other places like that. So there are just windows when reservations are available for these places, and the high demand ones, like some are booked up in a matter of minutes. So you should have like, you want to go to recreation.gov, make your login information, have your credit card in there, have everything ready, and get your dates in your cart and follow all the steps that they lead you through to get those reservations. And there are other things in the, like rafting the Colorado River is extremely popular, and that you might have to book 2 years in advance, or relatively nearby Great Smoky Mountains, there's a lodge on top of Mount LeConte Lodge. And that, too, you may have to book up to a year in advance. So all these things, it's kind of, I know if most people, I feel, are kind of like me, rather do things a little more free-handed and a little more flexible, but just not possible with a lot of these places. But they are generally worth it. And I think the premium you pay to, in particular, to stay at the parks is worth it to be close by to the most scenic areas of the park and not have to drive so far.
You know, I wanted to get into a little bit about your story because you went to school to be an engineer. You had also had enough credits for a couple other degrees, apparently, in math and in chemistry or science or something.
Yeah, math and chemistry.
Crazy. But you didn't like that corporate, sitting at your desk, 8-hour-a-day lifestyle, right?
Yeah, I don't want to seem like this big rebel or nonconformist or whatever you'd call me, but I got a job in electrical engineering after all that schooling, and the schooling thing was kind of just like, I'm very curious, and like chemistry was weird because they'd always tell us something like, you know what we said about this? That isn't quite what it is. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I feel like I could have handled that a couple of months ago. And it's like this weird sort of like TV cliffhanger type thing. I'm like, oh, what's going on here? So I wanted to know more. And math was the same thing where you get to the point where it's kind of like the, on the surface of what's known and unknown. Like, I found that really interesting. But engineering was definitely, like, I liked the concrete answers. And, but yeah, I worked in corporate America for 4 years, and I actually liked my job a great deal. And I think this is probably something a lot of people relate to, where working for a big business, I had multiple bosses, and they all had different spreadsheets with different colored cells, and they were all kind of pulling and pushing at different things, and I'd sit and talk to them, and they're all like reasonable people and intelligent people, and but I'd be like, if I did what you wanted me to do, then I wouldn't be doing what this person wants me to do, and it is always sort of this thing, and I always wanted to be truthful and honest in what I was doing, why I was doing it, and just wish they would just trust me that I was going to do what's right, and like numbers were always good for whatever I was doing. But then it got to the point where I just got tired of it and told them what they wanted to hear. And I'm like, well, this is dumb. And that's like, honesty is really important to me. And like, it just didn't, like, I don't know, it was like kind of just wearing, eroding the type of person that I was. And yeah, that kind of one thing led to another. And the exit was actually like very climactic because I went to New York to interview with Doctors Without Borders. And I thought I'd do something like good. Pragmatic. I built a horse stable, and like I thought I had some skills beyond like my academic history. And it happened that when I was there, I was out of vacation days, and our system crashed. So they started to search for, like, where in the world is Mike Oswald? And I was in New York interviewing for Doctors Without Borders, and my boss called. I'm like, I better pick this up and talk to him. He's like, what are you doing? Where are you? I'm like, New York. What are you doing? Interviewing for a job. And I'm like, it's not a bad thing. It's not a competitor, but they weren't happy, and they actually fired me when I came back.
Wow. So it's,
and then a different boss walked me out. He's like, you'll be happy in like not too long. And I'm like, I'm kind of happy now. Like, I had these maps coming into the office where I was trying to figure out how to get across the Darien Gap into South America. And it was, yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's corporate. Like, I understand, like, wanting to be, have rigid protocols and have things done a certain way so you can be a little more replaceable. But there's, yeah, I don't know how much you should. There's just one instance in corporate America where this lady who had 42 years with the company, and she was demoted to the bottom of the totem pole and just really hit me hard. Like, I'm like, that's a terrible way to do this thing. And I kind of, like, you see the heartless corporate bureaucracy of the thing. But it was very weird. Like, I did all our work, and she's meeting all our numbers, and they're just like, what's going on? And I'm sure they knew that I was doing it, but because she was open. She only wanted 2 more years at the company. I'm like, that's not too much to ask when you've given 42 years already. But yeah, they set her up for failure.
So you turned to nature.
Yeah, eventually. Like, I'm still unsure if I'm happy about that yet, but I mean, it's been more interesting, that's for sure. But it's been a lot more difficult.
That is Mike Oswald, travel writer and the author of Your Guide to the National Parks. It was the third edition was published this year, and it is our thank you gift. With a gift of $10 a month, it's a sustainer. You can get a copy of Your Guide to the National Parks. It's newly updated by our guest today, Mike Oswald. It includes 450 new photographs, 160 revised maps, 50 hiking tables. This is the only book you need to explore the national parks. It's your wish list book. It's the book, you know, your ultimate dashboard companion with 11 road trip suggestions. And while on your road trip, you can listen to public radio stations across the country, and you could do it with that good feeling in your heart, knowing you showed your support for your public radio station. Let's hear from 10 more people making a gift in the last, it looks like, 12 minutes. 10 more people, a gift at whatever level you can afford, whatever fits your budget. If $10 a month fits your budget as a sustaining member, we'd love to thank you for that with your guide to the national parks. At $10 a month, we're also offering the National Parks 2023 Wall Calendar. It's an absolutely beautiful calendar with amazing illustrations by Kai Carpenter. You know, they're images highlighting Redwood, Zion, Grand Canyon, Joshua Tree, and more. Each month when you turn a new page, you can dream up a new adventure. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org and show your support for 89.7 NPR News right now. We're looking for 10 more gifts before the end of the hour, and we've just got just about 11 minutes to go. 866-897-9678. Let's make this hour a great success. While Mike Oswald is here, he traveled all the way here to be, and you said you're going to pop in to Indiana, wait, to the Indiana Dunes.
Yep, Indiana Dunes. I'm going to camp there a few nights, and I'll be there handing out old second edition copies, just meeting some people and doing a few hikes and that sort of thing, just enjoying being by the lake.
How often do you always get around?
So the first two times, like, I guess the first trip was one extremely long 50,000-mile road trip, and that was almost 2 years of nonstop being on the road. And the second time was more disjointed and trying to do things during their best season, go to parks during their best season. And now the third tour was even more disjointed than that. I took a few flights to go places and a few fairly long road trips. And I'm not really sure what my plan is for this next round of trips to prepare for the fourth edition and a few other projects. But it'll probably be the same thing, more disjointed, some quick kind of in and out, and do specific things. Now I've got a pretty good like photo catalog, and just want to like get some GPS maps of some hikes and check out some newer things and that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's a little bit all over the place. See things that I haven't seen before and experience some ranger things that haven't been done before, and just kind of round out the total possibilities in the park, I guess. That most people are doing.
And readers of your books benefit from that. They benefit from all the work, all the legwork you do. You do it for them, kind of the hard work and the discovery process of this, and they can just tap into your books and roll it out and get out and see the world. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Thanks to Gwen and Tom Wahey in Dublin. That means there's 9 to go this hour now. 9 more pledges to go before the end of the hour. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're asking you to support this nonprofit public service radio station. Visit WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. We have some wonderful thank you gifts for this hour to help you plan your travel for the next year. As I mentioned, for $10 a month, you can get this great book called Your Guide to the National Parks. The new edition, it's of an award-winning guidebook, and it includes more than 450 new photographs, 160 revised maps, and 50 hiking tables. It's the only guidebook you'll need to explore the United States National Parks. Get this great book at $10 a month as a sustainer when you give at WOSU.org or when you call 866-897-9678. Also for $10 a month, we're offering the National Parks 2023 Wall Calendar. This beautiful calendar features 12 prints from illustrator Kai Carpenter. The calendar includes plenty of space for writing notes, and as a bonus, each image is in a ready-to-frame vintage poster format. That's $10 a month as a sustainer to get the National Parks Wall Calendar and support public radio at the same time. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And remember that listener support is the foundation of our budget. You listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher for information and analysis. You listen to this show to dig deep into important topics. Give now at WOSU.org or call us at 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Make a gift of $10 or $20 right now before this hour is over, and your gift in any amount is so powerful. Listeners and members are the power of public radio. You're supporting a show that is truly local. The news cycle can seem relentless. I feel it. You probably feel it. We've all been covering it, from Russia's war in Ukraine to the midterm elections. But on this show, there's room for a break from the news. Shows about travel and enjoying the outdoors. These shows are important too, and they're totally legit, and we do them all year round. Support All Sides today. Make a gift now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. The Biden administration plans on phasing out single-use plastic on federal lands by 2032, which seems like a long time away, but 10 years, who knows? I guess they got to use some up, maybe use up what they have. But how much of a problem is litter in national parks? What do you see? And why don't they just ban it altogether right away?
Yeah, I think a lot of those things are much harder to do than to, it definitely falls into the hard, easy to talk about and hard to do, right? Like the number one trash item I see is always people's Kleenex around hiking trails. And that's kind of understandable. Like you just don't keep track of it, take it out of your pocket and put it back in your pocket and misplace it. But I always think that these sort of things stem from like negative user experiences. There's always going to be a small fraction, a very, very, very small fraction of just delinquents or whatever that kind of, this is what they do wherever they go. They're the rebels and don't care about trash receptacles and that sort of thing. But I think once you have the people waiting in line to get into the park, the like maybe too expensive lodging situations or going there just think assuming you're going to be able to find a camping spot and then realize that you can't and then you have to backtrack to go somewhere else, and that's when people start not caring about keeping them neat and tidy like they should be, or like leaving it to the rangers to do that sort of thing. And we already talked about the staffing issues, so
yeah,
some of those things are hard to do. And the other thing that I think goes hand in hand with that is vandalism, where that's kind of an update. I think we just saw the Washington Monument get graffiti recently, and that's happened at the national parks too, where Zion, a big rock wall, was just painted with like blue. I think it was like a blue square, just a shape, which I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but it's like, what's the point? Like
means something to someone, I guess.
Yeah, why do it? And And I do think that is like, so maybe it is education. Maybe it is like, it's probably like deeper roots than that, like you know, all societal sort of thing. Like we're in a weird point
weird time
in society.
Right now.
So hard to sort of straighten out. And then when you do have political things, then it gets weaponized politically too. But I think for the most part, like the parks, people do love them. Almost everyone is going for them there. And as I was talking about how difficult it is to get to a lot of them, so you're putting a lot of time and effort. And I think 99.99% of the 300 million visitors that go to these places every single year, like they love them and they want them to look as good as they possibly can. And I think it's like it's a model to the world too, like our park. So we should take care of them for everyone who's visiting from abroad, because they are a travel destination globally. And you want them to look good, not have overflowing trash bins or trash wherever you can put it. So, but for the most part, I don't see too much of a problem with it. There are weird things where people go to the bathroom in weird places, and that's been sort of new to me. Like, I didn't think that would ever happen. I don't know what the deal with that is. Like, if people need better host training or if they they could use a couple nights at Isle Royale to kind of figure out how to backpack and what to do. And
that's a really good, safe, contained place to start out with something like that.
Yeah, and most of these places you do have bathrooms you can go to. So, it's again, it's kind of an education issue where I think, like, like what I do and what your program does is try to help educate people to know how to, like, a lot of these things are rewards for us, right? Like the national parks are a reward for the population of our country to go and enjoy these places. Like a lot of time and effort and money is put into making these things what they are, from the CCC to everything. And should definitely appreciate it as much as you can.
It's a great legacy. Thanks to Barbara Haar in Columbus. We have 7 more gifts to go in the last few minutes. Help us make this hour a success. It's just 2.5 minutes left in the hour. Mike Oswald, travel writer, author of Your Guide to the National Parks and its 3rd edition this year. Thanks so much for your time today. Thanks for traveling here to visit with us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
You bet. Once again, make your contribution of $20 a month as a sustainer right now and get this Ultimate National Parks combo package. It's a great day to become a member of 89.7 NPR News, or maybe increase your sustaining membership. We'd be supporting the news and information you rely on and trust, and you get a great thank you gift package to help you plan your summer vacation. At $20, you can get the Your Guide to the National Parks book plus the National Parks 2023 wall calendar. 866-897-9678. Remember, this is listener-supported, WOSU-FM and HD1 Columbus, and online at WOSU.org. It's a service of WOSU Public Media. 89.7 NPR News, global and local. You listen to All Sides every day for in-depth analysis of the most important issues of the day. Tell us this is important to you. Tell us this is something that matters to you. It's something that you value. 866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. We've been talking about visiting our national parks with author Mike Oswald. He has this great book about the parks, and it is our thank you gift today. Make a gift of $10 a month and get the book, Your Guide to the National Parks. The book includes step-by-step itineraries, kid-friendly activities, and lists the most popular ranger programs at each of the national parks. Whether you plan to stay at a hotel or go camping, you need a guidebook, and this is the guidebook. Make a gift of $10 a month right now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Help us make this hour a success. Show your support for 89.7 NPR News. Tell us that the kind of programming we provide for you every day is something that you value. 866-897-9678. We just have about 40 seconds to go this hour. Show your support right now. WOSU.org. You can read all about the book, Your Guide to the National Parks, and about the calendar, either at $10 a month as a sustainer or both for $20 a month as a sustainer. Help us make this hour a success. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. We depend on you. We know you depend on us. Let's make it work. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and thank you.